from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, so many of our liberties seem to be endangered these days. I want to talk about one that doesn't get, in my humble opinion, enough notice. And that is the freedom to make a U-turn. I know you're laughing. I hope you're laughing. No, but seriously, the freedom to make a U-turn, ladies and gentlemen. You don't think about it, hopefully, too much, until the time comes when you've made a terrible mistake while driving. Or the guy who's driving you has. And the necessity arises to turn the hell around. Now, it seems something that we take for granted as red-blooded Americans, but the danger is encroaching, and it comes particularly in the form of the one-way system. Now, I'm in England, as you know, and I've had the alloyed pleasure of being in two cities in the last towns in the last couple weeks, which have been which have had their city centers, their town centers, modified by traffic planners. You know, the same people who in Santa Monica put bumps and other obstacles in the road and call it traffic calming. Because when you see the drivers, you know they're calm. Over here, what they've done is install a one-way system in the town centers of most towns. And twice what's happened is the people who were driving me to my appointed destination to the theater, don't you know, made a wrong turn and couldn't turn around. Oh, no. Because that would be wasteful to have two-way traffic, you see. So in both cases, because now in cities like Los Angeles, it doesn't make any difference. You just go a couple blocks and you turn around. I mean, you make a left, you make another left, you make another left because it's built on a grid. Not so the higgledy-piggledy streets of England. In both cases, you had to go all the way around to the outskirts of town and re-enter. Try it again. That's not wasteful. Oh, no. And it's calming. In the case of Chester in North England, which so many people told me, it's so historic. Well, it is. When they closed the main thoroughfare through the center of town for a market on a Saturday, because nobody drives on a Saturday, one approached to find out that seminal fact only when it was too late to do anything about it except get snarled in a traffic jam, which, yes, they were right, was historic. So you had the choice of either crawling through that jam to get to the other side of town to come back through the one-way system or get the hell out of Chester. Needless to say, in my personal life book, Chester has entered the dustbin of history. So watch out for the one-way system as it comes to your town and wave farewell to your right to make a U-turn. Hello, welcome to the show.
I never thought it would happen with me and a girl from Clapham out on the windy common. Night I am forgotten. Was she to have the rations for summer or the passions? I said, you are a lady. Perhaps she said, I may be. We moved into a basement with thoughts of our engagement. We stayed in by the telly, although the room was smelly. We spent our time just kissing. The railway arms were missing. This love had got us hooked up, and all our time it took us. Got a job with Stanley. He said I'd come in handy and started me on Monday. So I had a bath on Sunday. I worked 11 hours and bought the girl some flowers. She said she'd seen a doctor and nothing now could stop her. I worked all through the winter. The weather brought some bitter. I put away a tenner each week to make her better. And when the time was ready, we had to sell the telly. The evenings by the fire with little kicks inside her. This morning at 4:50 I took her around the nifty, down to an incubator for 30 minutes. minutes later, she gave birth to a daughter. Within a year, a walker, she looked just like a mother. If there could be another. Now she's 2 years older, her mother's with a soldier. She left me with my drinking, became a proper stand. The devil came and took me from Barter Street to Bookie. No more nights by the telly, no more nights of nappy smelling. Alone here in the kitchen, I feel there's something missing. I beg for some forgiveness, but begging's not my business. And she won't write a letter, though I always tell her. And so it's my assumption, I'm really up the junction.
From London, England, where I don't think, there's some one-way streets here. But you can make U-turns wherever you like, because the taxi cabs have such small turning radii, don't you know? Well, not on one-way streets, they don't. Hello, welcome to the show. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Super Bowl. We can't sweep your butt beneath the rug. You're screwing up all kinds of drug.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has just published an assessment of the threat the country faces from antibiotic-resistant organisms, superbugs, ranking them by the number of illnesses and deaths they cause each year and outlining urgent steps that need to be taken to roll back the trend. The agency's conservative, self-proclaimed conservative assessment of the problem, each year in the United States, more than 2 million illnesses caused by bacteria and fungi that are resistant to at least some antibiotics. Each year, out of those illnesses, 23,000 deaths. That's almost half as many as killed on our roads. Because of those illnesses and deaths, $20 billion each year in additional healthcare spending. We'll fix that. And beyond the direct healthcare costs, an additional $35 billion lost to society in foregone productivity. If we're not careful, says Dr. Tom Frieden, the CDC's director, we will soon be in a post-antibiotic era. And for some patients and for some microbes, we are already there. The top three urgent threats, carbapenem-resistant Enterobacteriaceae, a set of germs that live in the ICUs that are resistant to almost all antibiotics, 9,000 infections per year, 600 deaths. Antibiotic-resistant gonorrhea, welcome back, which currently responds to only one drug, 246,000 infections per year, and Clostridium difficile. So nice they named it difficile, which is growing in resistance to one class of drugs, but more important, serves as a marker for the use of other antibiotics. 250,000 illnesses, 14,000 deaths. There are 12 resistant bacteria and fungus infections in a second category, which the agency dubs serious, and they include VRE, the foodborne organisms Campylobacter, Salmonella, and Shigella. Hey, everybody, do the Shigella. A world without the post-antibiotic era, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our new superbug overlords. You know, the President of the United States, when asked recently about the NSA secrecy, said this.
It is transparent. That's why we set up the FISA court.
Okay. But we learned this week the Justice Department's internal ethics watchdog says it never investigated repeated complaints by federal judges on that secret court, their complaints recently made public, that the government had misled them about the NSA's secret surveillance of Americans' phone calls and internet communications. Two judges on the court that oversees these spying programs, as you know, talked about it here last week, secretly rebuked federal officials and top secret court orders for misrepresenting how the NSA was harvesting and analyzing communications records. Those opinions were made public in the wake of Edward Snowden's leaks of NSA materials, making the programs public for the first time. So normally you'd think after the judges rebuked the government, maybe the Office of Professional Responsibility in the Justice Department might investigate what one judge called continuing contempt. No. The Office of Professional Responsibility routinely probes judges' allegations that the department's lawyers may have violated ethics rules that prohibit attorneys from misleading courts. Still, the office said in response to a Freedom of Information Act request filed by USA Today that it had no record of ever having investigated or even being made aware of the scathing classified critiques from the secret court. These opinions were sufficiently critical that OPR should have reviewed the situation, if only to assure the department that its lawyers were not to blame, according to former Office of Professional Responsibility attorney Leslie Griffin. Quote, there's enough in the opinions that it should trigger some kind of inquiry, she said. It says she, Leslie. But can't investigate what you don't know about. There's your transparency, Mr. President. There's your transparency right there. Ladies and gentlemen, what the frack? Colorado is currently experiencing some of the worst flooding it's ever seen, and even as one of the most densely fracked areas in the United States, people are now beginning to worry about the stability of those fracking sites and wells, many of which have been completely covered by floodwater. Photos and video footage continue to be published online showing evidence of flooded fracking sites still in operation, toppled or displaced condensate tanks, which hold waste fracking fluid, smaller tanks and barrels floating in the waters, leaking unknown fluids, and various pieces of drilling debris scattered throughout the state. The oil and gas industry has issued assurances that the flood should not affect the fracking sites in any way. Tisha Schuller, CEO and president of the Colorado Oil and Gas Association, said none of the fracking sites have been left open during the flood, and we don't have any major issues going on. However, according to other reports, at least one pipeline has already been confirmed to be broken and leaking. And an anti-fracking activist said hundreds, if not thousands, of wells underwater are underwater right now. We'll see. Hey, it's only wastewater. And speaking of waste, let's waste some time with Addie. No, don't get up there.
Save to meter.
Hey.
Save to save to meter.
What do you mean waste time?
I meant spend some time on waste, but with our friend Addie, the Atom.
Thank you.
All right, here we go. Concrete sampling from the Davis-Bessey nuclear power plant's shield building, so-called because it sometimes, has revealed several previously undiscovered cracks and shown the three known cracks have propagated a small amount, i.e. gotten bigger. Propagated a small amount. That's the quote from First Energy Nuclear Operating Corporation and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
Your teeth working?
I think so. Both the utility and the agency cautioned that the discoveries do not mean the structure is unsafe.
So that's safe cracking.
That is safe cracking. That's right. Adding that the shield building serves as an outer shell around the plant's reactor containment vessel, made of carbon steel 1.5 inches thick.
It's too thick.
The high-definition cameras now used for inspecting coil samples from the shield building identified three very tight subsurface pre-existing cracks in the building that were not visible with previous inspection technology, as well as the three cracks that had become slightly longer.
Propagated a small amount.
Yes, that's what I meant. Numerous hairline cracks were discovered in the structure's 2.5-foot concrete after a hole was cut through 2 years ago for access to place the reactor head.
That's what they used to call me in school.
You didn't go to school. You're an atom. Despite the determination that three of the cracks had spread, First Energy's site vice president says the building is still safe. So that is safe cracking. The multi-billion-dollar plant being built to process highly radioactive waste, here we go, at the Hanford site is years behind schedule and not expected to begin operations until the end of this decade at the earliest. We know that. But while scientists and regulators debate the safety of the plant, officials at the Hanford site face a much more significant problem: the loss of storage space in huge tanks built to hold 56 million gallons of radioactive waste.
It's It's not as much as you think. It's not as much as it sounds.
Okay. Built between the 40s and the 80s, the 177 waste tanks at Hanford were always seen as temporary. With the current waste treatment process expected to last into the middle of the century, many of the aging tanks will have to hold waste well past their design lives. Already, some are failing. The only answer, many experts and Hanford stakeholders say, is to build more storage tanks. They have nowhere to put it, so they're stuck. It's like you're floating in a boat that's leaking, and it's going into the ocean, says Casey Rode, a former Energy Department official who was in charge of tank safety at Hanford a couple of decades ago. Very simply put, he says it's going into the environment. There's nowhere else for it to go. Investigators for King 5 Television News in Seattle found the advice to build more storage tanks isn't new. As far as 20 years ago, top Energy Department officials urged their bosses to prepare for the worst and build additional tanks.
You're welcome.
But that advice wasn't heeded. A storage tank hasn't been built at Hanford for nearly 30 years. Dozens of other officials charged with the responsibility to help keep the nuclear leftovers from leaking into the nearby Columbia River have echoed the same advice in the intervening decades.
Decades don't intervene. They just pass.
All right, then. English lesson from Addie. Recent decisions by two local fishing cooperatives in Japan to delay a resumption of fishing near the Fuuk nuclear plant highlight the confusion over ocean contamination, according to the Wall Street Journal. No, Rupert, I didn't pay for it. The cooperatives decided not to fish in the area because they have no hope of selling their catch, not because marine life in the area is unsafe to eat. The decision suggests it's the perception of a health risk, not an actual health risk, that is limiting fishing in the area, says the Wall Street Journal. At the same time, a research team whose livelihood does not depend on fishing says there are still hot spots of contamination on the seabed in surrounding areas. The latest leaks at Fuuk have prompted South Korea to ban imports of marine products from the area.
It's just perception.
It's not reality.
Well, maybe it's reception.
Amid this ongoing uncertainty over the safety of produce from the seas around Fukushima, Japan's nuclear watchdog has decided to integrate existing monitoring efforts and present a clearer picture of the situation. A new panel set up by the Nuclear Regulation Authority aims to unify these efforts and provide clearer information to the international community. We will provide data to the world in a way that's easy to understand, says Kayoko Nakamura, chair of the new ocean monitoring panel.
That's what we've lacked, is clarity.
Mm-hmm. In addition to TEPCO's problem with how to manage the radioactive water from the defunct Fuuk plant, it's found there remain about 150,000 tons of radioactive waste, not water, that has not been properly stored. This, according to the Japan Daily Press, besides contaminated soil, among the debris collected were contaminated branches and leaves. That's about 30% of the waste that resulted. 36 municipalities in Fuuk Prefecture are supposed to provide temporary storage sites. Out of the intended 372 locations, only 139 have been utilized so far. Both local and central governments are accused of failing to assure residents that radioactive waste is going to be stored. Only 13 out of 36 municipalities were able to find land to be used as storage sites. One of the problems, lack of consent from the residents. Contaminated branches? Sure. Right over there.
It's all NIMBY now.
Yes, it is. Deadline Vienna, Japan Science Minister Ichita Yamamoto said in Vienna this week that the levels of contamination in the water near Fuuk did not present a serious health threat.
A comical health threat?
Perhaps. Earlier this month, of course, they were reported, the contamination levels reported to have spiked to their highest levels. But I would like to point out again here today that the effect of the contaminated water, says Yamamoto, is limited within 0.3 square kilometers just within the port outside of the plant and is actually below the World Health Organization guideline for drinking water quality.
Can't get better than that guideline.
No, you can't. The operator of the Fuuk plant said it dumped more than 1,000 tons of polluted water into the sea after a typhoon hit the facility. Typhoon Manyi smashed into Japan this week, bringing with it heavy rain that caused flooding in some parts of the country, including the beautiful city of Kyoto. The rain also lashed regions near the broken plant at Fuuk, swamping enclosure walls around clusters of water tanks that contain toxic water. Workers measured the radioactive levels of the water collected in the enclosure walls, pumping it back into tanks when the levels were high, said a TEPCO official. Others finding mostly rainwater, they released it from the enclosure. Because there's a limit on how much water we could store. Yeah, we know.
Watch the sarcasm.
Okay. Utility said about 1,100 tons of water with low levels of radiation, below the 30 becquerels of strontium per liter safety limit imposed by Japanese authorities, were released into the ground. But the company also said at one site where water was found contaminated beyond the safety limit, workers could not start the water pump quickly enough in the torrential rainpour downfall, and toxic water had leaked from the enclosure for several minutes. Strontium, as you know, is a potentially cancer-causing substance.
Potentially. No guarantee.
No guarantees to anything. And it took 2.5 years and some prime ministerial prodding, but this week, Tokyo Electric Power Company has finally said it'll consider taking the site's last two supposedly viable nuclear reactors out of commission forever. Its promise to consider decommissioning was the most prominent result of a plant tour by Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Four of the six reactors at the site suffered meltdowns, as you know. During Thursday's two-hour visit to the site, Prime Minister Abe said he told TEPCO's president to decommission the remaining two reactors as well. The president answered he would decide on the decommissioning issue within this year, said the Prime Minister.
Takes a long time to consider.
It does.
It's a consideration half-life.
And TEPCO had been advised as early as 2 years ago to create that frozen soil shield barrier to prevent groundwater contamination from spreading. It totally ignored the proposal, citing company profitability and sustainability as excuses. Discussions about the necessity to immediately create a barrier to block groundwater began as early as a month after the tsunami. It was obvious to us there was a great deal of groundwater intrusion into the plant, and we shared that with the Japanese government, says Charles Casto, a representative of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. At that time, he says, they didn't believe there was a significant amount of groundwater getting into the plant. TEPCO opposed the recommendation anyway, claiming the creation of the barrier wall would give rise to investor speculation of impending bankruptcy. Cost wasn't the only reason for not moving ahead, said Yoshikazu Nagai, a TEPCO spokesperson. Said a memo from TEPCO. There's a strong possibility the market will conclude we are moving a step closer to insolvency or headed in that direction. So TEPCO was able to persuade the Japanese government to refrain making an announcement geared toward the creation of the barrier wall.
Hey, better late than never.
Cliche wisdom from Addy the Atom. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the Atom. Clean, cheap, safe. Too cliche to meter.
I look high, I look low, I'm looking everywhere I go. Looking for a home in the heart of the country. Ooh. heart of the country.
Well, of course, ladies and gentlemen, we in radio are always looking for entertaining new way to waste some time. And it being almost the end. Well, let's see. It's officially the end of summer. So I thought a good idea today would be to share some ideas on your favorite vacation this summer. Absolutely non-controversial and pretty benign topic for a phone-in segment. So let's hear your thoughts on your favorite vacation this summer. Line one, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Sudhir.
Hello.
This is your old friend Shab Shab.
Yes, Shab Shab. I recognize you you get in right away.
Yes, sir. I have a very fast dialing finger.
No, but every time.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you have fast fingers, Shab Shab. I should clarify to the audience, this is someone who's called us before several times. He was one of Saddam Hussein's famous lookalikes when Saddam Hussein was in power and over in Iraq. Shab Shab, where are you calling from today?
Sir, I'm not at liberty to tell you where I'm calling from today,
no.
But this is my favorite vacation this year so far.
All right. Well, what makes it so good?
My neighbors can't find me here.
So, are you having neighbor problems?
Mr. Sudhir, the entire country is having neighbor problems. Well, I don't know what you're reading or what you're eating for that matter.
Yeah.
I'm still in Iraq.
Okay.
I will never leave Iraq.
Good.
It is my home.
Mm-hmm.
It is my homeland.
Mm-hmm.
It is my land.
Okay.
But it's being torn apart right now, and I can't live where I used to live.
Yeah.
I can't live where I lived after that.
Mm-hmm.
So I can, for the moment, live
where you're
living
now.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that would be your almost a permanent vacation, you're saying?
Until I have to move again, yes, sir.
All right. Now, Shab Shab, just to clarify, mm-hmm. is this just sort of petty neighborhood disputes, or is this something? Does this have anything to do with the sectarian violence of a few years ago?
Yeah, it has everything to do with that, Mr. Schreier. I could not live in my old neighborhood, which was Sunni.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to a Shiite neighborhood. I could not live there either.
Wow.
Because I'm neither Sunni nor Shiite.
Really?
I belong to a very small tribe
uh-huh.
called the Shinus,
uh-huh.
and we are not accepted by either side.
Wow.
So it's caught in the middle, as you would say.
Wow. The Shinus.
Yes, sir.
Mm.
But in the 14th century,
mm-hmm.
There was a marriage between a Shiite tribe, member of a Shiite tribe, and a member of a Sunni tribe, and it formed a new tribe. And I tell you, Mr. Sharir,
yes.
Given the hostility and mm-hmm. the violence and the, everything that's mm-hmm. going around us, if my religion allowed for posthumous annulment, I would file for it and reverse that marriage,
yes.
because it's been nothing but trouble.
I don't think any religion allows for posthumous annulment.
Well, then a pox on all of them.
Well.
But I tell you, Mr. Sharir, mm-hmm. I'm not calling to complain.
Good.
This is the fate of my people, mm-hmm. my country.
Yes.
Since the Americans pulled out, it's gotten the violence is worse.
Well,
by that I mean for the people who are doing it,
it's better.
But for the other people, it's
worse. Yes. So, Shab Shab, when you say you're having this is your best vacation.
Yes, sir.
Are you? Last few times we talked,
mm-hmm.
you had a fairly thriving business. You were selling high end.
Audio
equipment.
Yes.
Have you taken up that that trade in your new abode,
Mr. Sharir?
Yes.
Just ask yourself,
okay.
Who in their right mind is going to buy $5,000 KEF speakers and blast them with $10,000 tube preamp and $20,000 amp of various manufacturers,
mm-hmm.
When all it's going to do is call attention to the fact that somebody in this house has money and therefore boom goes the house
sure.
The next day?
Yeah.
No, sir. That's not in the realm of anything that I could consider profit-making.
Well, I can't imagine that you've gone back to being a Saddam lookalike at this point in time. I mean, the market for that has to be.
Mr. Sharia, mm. you do not understand Iraq at all, unlike most Americans, I have
okay.
to say.
Yeah.
Yes, The market for Saddam appearances has boomed.
Really?
Not like the house would boom.
No.
In the recent past. Mm-hmm. Not just for nostalgia for the old days when there was electricity mm-hmm. and so forth and so on.
Yes.
And security from everybody but the government. But also just kind of a nostalgia thing where, those were the bad old days or the old days or the good old days. But they were the old days.
Yes.
And people have that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been able, thanks to Allah, to merge my two businesses, my two lines of work
mm-hmm.
In the recent months. So, yes, I am Saddam again in photographs and depictions otherwise. And I am also involved in high-end audio. But it is not speakers, it is not amplifiers, mm-hmm. it is not preamps, it's not anything that sits in your house and goes boom. It's something portable, and it's something that you carry with you and gives you great sound wherever you go.
Okay, I'm guessing headphones?
You are correct, sir.
Ah.
The Bomb by Saddam.
The Bomb?
Is the line of headphones I helped to organize mm-hmm. and I was consultant on. I was a partner in the company.
Good.
And of course I am the Saddam.
Sure.
I'm the figurehead, I'm the front, I'm the face of the
yes.
company.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Bomb by Saddam headphones, which are selling like, do you have in America hot cakes?
We have hot cakes.
Do you have hot cakes?
All right, they're selling well.
Yes, they are.
Good.
And so this is a new life for me.
Mm-hmm.
My family, of course, is at a secure location elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I see them very via Skype more than not. But it's what passes for the good life.
Shop, yeah. Something occurs to me. If... you are known to, I guess, your enemies.
Yes, sir.
As a member of this Xinu tribe.
Yes.
And you've had to leave your home.
Yes, sir.
Your previous home. How can you be out making public appearances as the face of the Bomb by Saddam headphones?
Mr. Sirir, I ask you to think with your head for one time, please.
Okay.
I am the face of the Bomb by Saddam mm-hmm. headphones. And the packaging,
yes.
and the advertising,
yes.
and the marketing materials,
okay.
and the PR, the press kits that
sure.
go out,
mm-hmm.
in no way do I make public appearances as the face of the Bomb by Saddam.
Well, then...
You know, from our previous conversations, there were 32 Saddam lookalikes
mm-hmm.
when he was alive. So, of course, what I have done is I have hired three or four of them to be the way I was and they were in Saddam's time to go out and appear in place of him for security reasons.
Yes,
now,
sir. Yes.
In the turn of the circle, now I need the security reasons and I hire them and they appear for me.
For you. Okay.
Yes.
So, understood. And so you just sit there in your undisclosed location and collect the profits.
I do more than that, Mr. Trillion.
Okay.
I devise the marketing campaigns. I
yes.
devise the slogans. The new slogan for the Bomb by Saddam is, mm-hmm. it'll blow your head off. Which, you know, it's not amusing in
no.
the current context, but
would,
it does make the point, and
mm-hmm.
it has an emotional resonance with Sunnis and Shiites alike because
I can see that, yes.
the obvious reason.
Yes.
So the Bomb by Saddam, it will blow your head off. it has got them selling, as I say, like the hotcakes.
Or like hotcakes.
Yes.
So Shab Shab, a working vacation, I guess you would say,
sure.
Is your best vacation of the year.
Yes.
And I always appreciate hearing from you.
Thank you.
Catching up on what's going on over there. Thank you for participating in this time-wasting segment of the program.
Thank you, Mr.
Shop Shop calling from somewhere in Iraq today here on the show.
La 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 la. Sing for your supper and you'll get breakfast. Songbirds always eat if their song is sweet to hear. Sing for your luncheon and you'll get dinner. Dine with wine of choice if romance is in your voice. I heard from a wise canary, trilling makes a fellow willing.
So little swallow, swallow now. Now is the time to sing for your supper and you'll get breakfast. Songbirds are not dumb. They don't buy a crumb of bread. Tis said, so sing and you'll be fed. Canary trilling makes a fellow willing. So little swallow, swallow now. Now is the time to sing for your supper and you'll get breakfast. Songbirds are not dumb. They don't buy a crumb of bread. Tis said, so sing, just sing. La 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 la. Sing and you'll be fed.
This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, the new F-bomb, foreclosure, comes to mind once now. Once again, they were known as liar's loans. You've heard about them on this broadcast from Eve Smith, among other people. They were mortgages given to people who couldn't afford them based on salaries and assets, claimed, sometimes inflated or even invented. Such loans, which often featured escalating interest rates and huge balloon payments, allowed borrowers to state rather than prove their income and assets. About 5 years ago, the economy swooned as thousands who'd taken out such loans lost their homes to foreclosure. Some also landed in prison, like Lacey Phillips and Aaron Hall in Madison, Wisconsin. Following a trial in 2011, the couple was convicted of fraud, sentenced to serve 60 days in order to repay, along with their broker, $90,000 in restitution. This was part of a nationwide push by the Obama administration to find and punish perpetrators of the mortgage fraud that triggered the thing that went boom. And didn't go boom. Went the opposite of boom. Earlier this month, the U.S. Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago overturned the couple's fraud convictions, ordering the case sent back to the judge. The appeals court found that Judge Barbara Crabb improperly blocked the couple from fully testifying about the role played by Brian Bowling, a mortgage broker convicted of submitting fraudulent information to secure almost $2 million in loans that resulted in $500,000 in losses. There's more. In overturning the couple's convictions, the nine-judge appeals court majority called them financial naives and hapless victims of Bowling, whose 51-month sentence was cut to 38 months by the same judge, Judge Crabb, after he, Bowling, agreed to testify against Phillips, Hall, and other home buyers. Getting the picture? The assistant U.S. attorney, Dan Graber, who prosecuted the cases, did not return a message for comment. Prosecutorial misconduct, giving the mortgage broker who lured people into getting loans with the promise that they could lie about their incomes, giving him a smaller sentence for testifying against the people who believed him. The new F-bomb, ladies and gentlemen, foreclosure. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Facebook has apologized for publishing a dating ad featuring a photo of a 17-year-old who had killed herself after complaining about being cyberbullied. Canadian Retai Parsons took her own life in April after having been severely bullied. Her father said he had been disgusted by the advertisement. Facebook said it banned the company involved from the social network. This is an extremely unfortunate example of an advertiser scraping an image from the internet and using it in their ad campaign.
Yeah, that's what's wrong with it, not Facebook's privacy policy. This is, quote, this is a gross violation of our ad policies, and we've removed the ad and permanently deleted the advertiser's account. We apologize for any harm this caused, unquote. Facebook, the advertisement had used the title, Find Love in Canada, and referred users to a chat site. The website is no longer online. Its owner could not be reached for comment. Facebook is sorry. A nationwide corporate restaurant chain is apologizing after a spokesperson says one location's management mishandled a situation involving one family's rambunctious children. This is for all of us who think families with noisy children in restaurants get off scot-free. Sometimes there's overreaction. Eli Gao and Lillian Maliti took their two young sons to an Applebee's in Katy, Texas, just west of Houston. Gao claims his oldest boy, three-year-old Ryan, began wandering from the table halfway through dinner. When Gao went to bring Ryan back to the table, he realized the family had attracted unwanted attention. The manager was walking to me, says Gao, straight forward to me. Gao says the manager told him the children were making too much noise. Then he called authorities and told the family to leave. When they walked outside, a Harris County's sheriff's deputy confronted them and handed them a warning for criminal trespass. Says Maliti, I feel disrespected. This has never happened in my life. That's the wife. Applebee's corporate officers have issued a profuse apology for the matter. Says Gao, the father, I feel heartbroken. I feel very sad. Yes, of course. You should just tell him, why don't you maintain control of your children at the table? Douglasville, Georgia City Councilperson Dennis McLean has apologized for his Facebook posts. Here's another Facebook apology that featured derogatory terms criticizing the Obama administration, black fashion trends, Tiger Woods, and the gay rights movement. The Orlando Sentinel, the Douglas County Sentinel, reported that the councilman's Facebook page featured posts that included language and comments that some called offensive to blacks and gays. Even after the news of the posts was published, they remained visible to the public. What he had said was he linked to a story on the Boy Scouts banning physically unfit scouts from attending a physically demanding jamboree. He added the remarks, gotta make room for the perverts, can straight scoutmasters attend, unquote. A humbled and sincere McLean offered a heartfelt apology for the remarks to anyone that they may have offended or hurt. I'm sorry, I'm wrong, I know it, I probably offended a lot of people. I've torn down a lot of goodwill that I created, and I don't think I can defend anything. Maybe it's more than a lesson well learned. I'm truly sorry. Just know you can tear down a lot in 5 minutes that you took 70 years to build. He's 70, and he did that. He's 70, and he's on Facebook. Oh, I don't want to be where my dad is. Officials from the operator of the Fuke nuclear plant have apologized to Japan's prime minister for misspelling his name on a special radiation suit. Yes, can't they do anything right? In the latest public relations debacle for TEPCO, Shinzo Abe, the prime minister, donned the suit emblazoned with the incorrect spelling of his name during a tour of the crippled nuclear complex. The first three of the four characters used to write his name were correct. The final one represented the same sound, but had a different meaning. It was a typing error, said a TEPCO spokesman. They're not called TEPCO. A manager for United Airlines has apologized for unreliable service. No, not to you and me. In Durango, Colorado. It's prompted some passengers to leave a day early just to make connecting flights. Senior United Express manager Alicia Gabriel said the plane's on-time departures and arrivals have been erratic. She said improvements are already underway, like buying new watches for the... John Whitbeck, the chairman of the 10th District Republican Committee in Virginia, a prominent figure in the Loudoun County GOP, has apologized for telling an anti-Semitic joke at a rally for Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, a Senate candidate, last week. Earlier this week, I made a lighthearted attempt at humor to which some have taken offense, Whitbeck said in a statement. It was certainly not my intent to offend anyone, and I sincerely apologize to those who were. The joke was, the head of the Jewish religion presented the Pope with a bill for the Last Supper. Amateurs and humor, ladies and gentlemen, they don't go together. 40 years after the 12-year-old Santos Rodriguez was shot in the head by a Dallas police officer, Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings apologized this week for the tragedy that still resonates in the city's Hispanic community. Some community leaders have been calling for the apology ever since the shooting occurred. I got a lot of questions about apologizing for the death of Santos Rodriguez, Rawlings said. At the city's conversations about race, can't we all have one nationally, all the time, ever? He continued, I don't have any clue why the city hasn't apologized for that. There's no excuse for that. On behalf of the citizens of Dallas, the Dallas City Council, the Dallas Police Department, we wholeheartedly apologize for the death of Santos Rodriguez, unquote. Rodriguez was barefoot and handcuffed in the back of a police car when he was fatally shot in the head. He was suspected of stealing $8 in change from a soda machine. Trying to coerce a confession by playing Russian roulette, the police officer pointed a .357 Magnum at Santos. He pulled the trigger twice. The first time, no shots were fired. The second time, the gun went off. The officer later said the shooting was an accident. Hope that soda machine got its $8 in change back. Deadline Helsinki. 75 years later, Finland has apologized for listing a Jewish sprinter as finishing fourth in a race that he won. According to ESPN, Abraham Tokasier ran the 100 meters in a 1938 Finnish national competition at Helsinki's Olympic Stadium. In a photo in a local newspaper the next day, he was seen crossing the finish line first. The Finnish Athletics Federation says any manipulation or falsification of results is shocking and against the basic principles of sports. Federation Chairman Vesa Harmakorpi says, quote, I present our humblest apologies over this issue to all those and their nearest ones who have suffered wrongdoing. Spokesman Iro Ramo says international rules don't allow results to be adjusted later. Jewish groups have for years demanded the result be changed. We can hang the apology on his wall. University of British Columbia president apologized for the appalling chant sung by business students during a freshman week orientation event earlier this month. Promising further action later, President Stephen Toop says he plans to release the full report on the incident. The university will take specific action. I am very sorry for what our first-year students were exposed to. They deserve better, which is why we strive to ensure both our own orientation activities and those run by student organizations are designed to make newcomers feel respected and engaged, he said in a statement. I am also very sorry for how these reports may have affected members of our community, students, faculty, staff, alumni, and our many partners and champions. The incident took place on a bus ride during the three-day orientation for the business school. The chant condones non-consensual sex with underage girls, saying, Y-O-U-N-G at UBC, we like them young. Y is for your sister, O is for oh so tight, U is for underage, N is for no consent, G is for go to jail. The same chant was recited at St. Mary's University in Halifax, prompting the resignation of the president of the student association there. At St. Mary's, don't you know? Deadline Charlestown, Rhode Island. A pilot has apologized for shooting rifles with friends from a low-flying chopper in Charlestown. Dean Scatera said he apologized up and down. Good way for a helicopter pilot to apologize. And had promised it won't happen again. He was firing semi-automatic pistols and rifles from a chopper. He and some friends, they were shooting at a junk car in a semi-rural area. When Police Sergeant Philip Gingerella asked Scalera, why he thought it was a good idea to fire guns in a populated area, he said the helicopter was low enough to be safe, and he knew of pilots in other areas who've done the same thing. In Rhode Island, Gingerella asked. No, Texas, Scalera replied. Gingerella said, this isn't Texas. Get that man a map. Arcade Fire, the rock group, has apologized for their new album's promotional campaign, which resulted in private buildings being spray-painted with the logo of the new album. Controversy began when a writer for Slate complained that the critically and commercially successful band was defacing public property to promote the album. Arcade Fire's frontman Wynn Butler sent a handwritten note of apology, explaining the matter. The material was supposed to be put up with water-soluble paint or chalk, so it would come off in the rain. He admitted, however, somewhere down the line, someone must have gotten confused and used paint. Those damn record companies. Dateline Honolulu. Line has spilled 233 gallons of molasses into Honolulu Harbor. It's not going to pass on the cleanup and damage costs to its customers or to taxpayers. And the president of the company said, we can't undo this, but we can make it right. We've let you down. We're very sorry. Matson's the only company to ship molasses from Hawaii in bulk. It plans eventually to release its findings on what caused the spill. Addie says, never too late. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, remember the good old days when boxers used to threaten to kill each other? Now they're apologizing to each other. Boxer Floyd Mayweather has apologized for an Instagram photo and caption that mocked former world champion and fight promoter Oscar De La Hoya's substance abuse problem. Mayweather apologized for the picture of a somber-looking De La Hoya, which ran on his Instagram page with the headline, "Meanwhile in Rehab." The caption underneath said, "Oscar, I gave Canelo the wrong blueprint. I was high," unquote. Mayweather described the incident as stupid and claimed the photo was posted without his knowledge. He did not go into detail about how it ended up on his Instagram account or who might have put it there. "It's unfortunate that a stupid picture was posted to my Instagram account earlier today that was not posted by me or authorized by me to post," Mayweather wrote in a statement emailed to reporters by his public relations firm. Yeah, he wrote it. Quote, "I apologize to Oscar and his family for this posting. I wish him well, and I'm rooting for him to win his fight, too. I also apologize to all my followers for this ridiculous post." Unquote. Mayweather has previously admonished De La Hoya's fast-paced lifestyle and his track record with Golden Boy Promotions. De La Hoya checked himself into a treatment center last week. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
After 7 years, the Department of Energy has failed to meet its goals for commercial-scale biofuels refineries, according to a new report from the DOE's Inspector General. Biofuels, fuels made from, switchgrass and such. To anyone following the ongoing technical and financial troubles in the biofuels industry, the Inspector General's assessment of the results isn't a big surprise, says Green Tech Media. But the audit provides an official progress report, or lack thereof, of the government's $603 million biofuels push. That's half, more than half a billion, don't you know? The EPA mandate to demonstrate the commercial application of integrated biorefineries had not been met, and the department was not on target to meet its biofuels production capacity goal, according to Inspector General Greg Friedman in his report. According to the audit, 40% of the projects selected under funding opportunity announcements were scrapped by the DOE because recipients failed to meet targets, but not before $75 million was spent. The 9 other projects being funded by DOE, quote, have experienced technical and or financial problems, unquote, that have caused 2-year delays in the build-out of production facilities. The delays have forced numerous changes to national targets. Last year, DOE revised its 2014 target for producing 100 million gallons of advanced biofuels down to 80 million. After half of the projects that were supposed to contribute were scrapped. Last month, the EPA revised its target for 11 million gallons of cellulosic fuels. Hey, that's switchgrass. Down to 6 million gallons, a goal that will still be very difficult to reach. The Energy Information Administration reported that earlier this year, commercial cellulosic biofuels production capacity is only at 20,000 gallons. It predicted the industry could feasibly scale up to 5 million by the end of the year. But that would still be short, far short, of EPA's revised targets. The problems plaguing the advanced biofuels industry have been wide-ranging, some beyond the Department of Energy's control. For example, after the financial crisis, companies found it very difficult to secure funds for scaling their plants. This caused long delays or forced a number of companies to drop plans altogether. The Inspector General criticized the Department of Energy for not doing a better job of validating the technology or the technologies it was investing in. And some U.S. Border Patrol agents don't understand the agency's rules regarding the use of force and receive insufficient training, according to a report released this week by the Department of Homeland Security's Office of Inspector General. After a series of fatal confrontations with agents on the border in the Southwest, the IG reviewed more than 1,100 allegations of excessive use of force in the 5 years ending September 30th of last year. According to the report, an audit of Border Patrol training showed many agents and officers, quote, do not understand use of force and the extent to which they may or may not use force, unquote. The report also says training was too short, you've heard of him, and trainers were not giving sufficient tests on the use of less lethal force. Hi, I'm Less Lethal Force. Good night. No, wait, there's more. But that's the news of the Inspector General, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, ladies and gentlemen, For those of you trying to make long-range plans, habitable conditions on planet Earth will persist for at least another 1.175 billion years, and perhaps as much as 3.5 billion, according to a new study conducted by astrobiologists at the University of East Anglia in England. Findings are published in the journal Astrobiology. The researchers determined the Earth's lifespan based on the rate of rising temperatures of the sun. I've always been worried about the sun dying. It appears the sun heats up before it dies, unlike the rest of us. The scientists claim beyond this projected time, life on Earth will not be able to survive due to the high temperatures of the sun, which will eventually lead to the drying up of seas and the destruction of all possible life forms. After this point, the Earth would be in the hot zone of the sun. With temperatures so high, the seas would evaporate. We would see a catastrophic and terminal extinction event for all life on Earth, says a researcher at the university. The habitable period cannot last long. Stars become hotter over time. Humans would be the first species that will cease to exist well before the 1.75 billion year predicted time. Humans would be in trouble with even a small increase in temperature. Near the end, only microbes in niche environments would be able to endure the heat. So better be friends with your microbes. No Earth analog planet has been detected as of yet. It's possible there will be a habitable Earth-like planet within 10 light years, which is very close in astronomical terms. Reaching it would take hundreds of thousands of years with our current technology, though. If we ever needed to move to another planet, Mars is probably our best bet. It's very close and will remain in the habitable zone until the end of the sun's lifetime, 6 billion years from now. So, maybe you want to rent, not buy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. The USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of the North American continent by the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com and available as a free podcast through Sideshow Network, iTunes, and SoundCloud. And it'd be just like the fracking wells not flooding out. And us storing all the waste, if you'd agree to join me then. Would you already? Thank you very much, uh-huh. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. I'll see you on Twitter, at the Harry Shearer, and I won't really see you. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on and a fabulous store are yours. They're mine, but they're yours to experience at harryshearer.com. And I'll see you on Twitter at the Harry Shearer. I won't really see you. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities. Originating this week from London, England, through the facilities, I say, worldwide of the Change is Hard Radio Network. So long from London. And fight for your right for the U-turn.